to another edition of Flea Market Fantasy, the world's second greatest Bronze Age era comic book podcast. Joining me, as always, is new Mike L, Kevin Jank.
No matter, Mike Dell, the CAA got you pushing too many pencils.
That's right. Get to the chopper. Yeah. Today, tell the kids what we're reading today, Jank.
We are going to be reading Predator issue number 1 from 1989.
Yes,
by Dark Horse Comics.
Yeah, our first issue from Dark Horse Comics we've ever done on this show. So
hey, look at that.
That's something.
Breaking and new ground.
Yeah. The Predator. I'll be honest, I didn't even know. I mean, I guess I was aware they had comic books, because I do seem to recall Batman vs. Predator at some point,
yep.
Right?
There was a couple Batman vs. Predators, I think Superman vs. Aliens and possibly Predators. There's a lot of DC crossovers. And there was Aliens vs. Predator comics before they ever made Alien vs. Predator movies.
Yeah, this is something. All right, but before we get into Predator, let's remind everybody, if you're watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe. We're up to 134 subscribers. So we picked up 3 in the past week. So the Flea Army continues to grow. And again, our goal is to get to 500 before the Earth...
At the end of 2023.
Yeah, before the sun burns out and our life is extinct. On the planet Earth. So let's make that happen.
Or that Together, Julia Roberts movie comes true and the world ends.
So there it is. Like and subscribe. Thank you. Now, Jank, Predator. Let's start with Dark Horse Comics, first of all. In the early 1980s, there was a fella, he was named Mike Richardson, and he owned a chain of comic book stores called Pegasus Books in Portland, Oregon. And then in 1986, he took the profits from all the success he had with his comic book stores, and he created Dark Horse Comics.
Mm.
And it's headquartered in Milwaukee, Oregon, but Milwaukee is spelled differently than Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So that's odd. Dark Horse publishes a lot of licensed properties, including Star Wars, Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
They lost that to Marvel. They lost Predator to Marvel now.
Oh, Predators at Marvel?
Yeah, Aliens too.
Aliens, also the Terminator and the Predator. Dark Horse also championed creator rights, and they published Frank Miller's Sin City, Mike Mignola's Hellboy, and Gerard Way's Umbrella Academy. You know anything else about Dark Horse Comics?
I'm sure I've read some other ones. They definitely did all that early Star Wars stuff that was popular, like, Heir to the Empire and stuff like that.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever really purchased many Dark Horse comics over there. But I guess growing up, they were always, like, the third biggest company probably behind Marvel, DC, and then at least I always thought of Dark Horse next.
Until Image started, yeah.
Yeah, until Image and that. But, all right, Predator. This is, of course, based on the 1987 movie starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, who played Major Alan Dutch Schaefer.
Yeah. I don't think they ever call him Alan or Schaefer in the movie. So
probably Dutch. The premise of the film that his military rescue team consisting of Mac, Poncho, Blaine, Billy, and Hawkins are tasked with rescuing a foreign cabinet minister and his aide from insurgents in an unspecified South American country, and they become hunted by an alien.
Ooh. Yeah.
Predator.
True. Do you know the alien species name for the predator there?
Wait, let's see. I wrote it down. Yautja? Is that right?
Yautja.
Wait, say that again.
Yautja.
Yautja. Y-A-U-T-J-A. Yautja.
Yeah.
Now, I, of course, was a big fan of the first Predator when it came out when I was a young lad. That is a very entertaining movie. Jesse Ventura is always entertaining when you see him or something. And
sexual Tyrannosaurus.
And Carl Weathers is in this as well, right?
Yeah. They have that awesome handshake. It's pretty amazing. It right. Means everywhere now.
But, yeah, it is a great movie there. And so the Predator design, well, I should say there's been 5 Predator films plus 2 Alien Predator films. So 7 total. And how many have you seen, Jank? You're Mr. Movie. Jank's a regular Siskel Ebert. for those people that don't know. He watches a lot of movies. Yeah.
I've seen all of them except that most recent one that's just called Prey. I did not watch that one, but I've seen the rest of them.
Wow, look at you. You're an expert in the Predator. I've seen one. I saw the first one. And
you're like, I've had my fill. Yeah. Back well, away from the table.
Well, Arnold wasn't in any other ones, right? He was just in that first one.
No, they did want him to come back for the Predator, the Shane Black one, but I guess they wanted him to do like a cameo. He's like, I'm not doing a cameo. You either put me in the movie more or I'm not showing up. And he just did not show up. So
I don't blame him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to see him fight another Predator again. It was a good idea to have Predator 2 be about somebody else. Like, I understood that. That's fine. But I do want him to, you know, fight another Predator before he dies. So let's get this going again.
Wait, do I like to be like his final action is fighting a Predator and then he dies?
Yeah.
Like Predator invades a nursing home and Arnold has to stop. Who was in the second Predators, or was it Predators?
Oh, it's the cavalcade of people, but the main person is Danny Glover, so.
Oh, sorry. Danny Glover.
Yeah, it's an interesting choice for an action hero, but it works. He's like a hard-boiled, you know, detective leading this unit, and he's got, there's like, oh man, a lot of character actors, but then Bill Paxton joins, so that's pretty great. Bill Paxton's like the new guy on the team. He's awesome as always, and then kind of, the FBI that's kind of trying to keep them out of the Predator business is, he's played by Gary Busey, who we just saw on Point Breakers.
Wow, Danny Glover and Gary Busey, that's pretty good. So I guess the premise of, Predator 2 there is like the Predators come to the big city, like in this comic book. Is that kind of?
Yeah, it's very similar. You can tell that the movie took a lot of, pages out of this book. It takes place in LA instead of New York like this one does, and there is like a heat wave. Cause the Predator always likes to go where it's hot. That's something they always set up. I mean, that's why he was in the Central American jungle in the first one. Is that he likes things that are hot, and he always goes after things like people that have guns. Like, he won't kill you if you're just unarmed, really.
Oh.
The time anyway.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah, he's sporting. He's a sporting fella.
I didn't pick up on that in the book, but yeah, everyone had guns, huh? Everyone had guns.
Yeah.
All right. So, the old Predator.
Yeah,
there,
it's very similar because it's a lot of gang war stuff and, you know, Predators taking out the gangs and the cops trying to track them down. I did see a quote online actually where, let me see if I could pull this up here.
I get Jack doing research.
So I was like, this does seem very familiar. Like, did this actually influence it? And it said, in an interview with the website AVP2 Daily, Warner said the first Predator comic series absolutely had some influence on the film Predator 2. The basic plots of the film and comic series are almost identical. When Dark Horse created the first Predator series, plans for a Predator sequel had stalled since Arnold Schwarzenegger had declined being in it. The series showed how you could use other actors in the lead, probably the first time that the comic series actually had an effect on the film franchise that inspired it.
Do you think a comic book series also inspired Caddyshack too? Yeah, I don't think so.
Could be.
All right, so the Predator design was created by special effects artist Stan Winston, and James Cameron provided inspiration for the unique face because Winston and Cameron were on a flight to Japan together or something. I guess they worked together on Terminator and stuff. And Cameron said he always wanted to see a monster with mandibles.
Ooh, so, that's a good choice. It's a very distinctive look, and I love it.
So that's what Winston came up with. And there were several failed attempts to create the monster before Schwarzenegger, he recommended Winston, because the two worked together on, like I said, Terminator with Cameron. And would you like to tell the people who was originally supposed to play the Predator? Because it sounds like you know.
Oh, sure, yeah. JCVD, the old Jean-Claude Van Damme.
It's crazy, right?
The original Predator, yeah. In a very terrible looking costume.
You know, I didn't even see what outfit he had, but they wanted, the original idea was to be like a smaller, nimble, like a ninja kind of alien going through the jungle murdering people. So that's why Jean-Claude Van Damme was there. But they couldn't get the costume to work, I guess, in the jungles they were filming in. And it was like difficult to move around in, because I guess he was on stilts and like because the monster's legs were bent backwards, kind of like, I don't know, some weird creature, you know? With the
like a cloven, like a goat.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they, but then they said, you know what? He looks kind of tiny there. He's not the big fella. And we got Schwarzenegger and Ventura and Carl Weathers, you know, these big strapping lads. We need someone way bigger than that. So they told Jean-Claude to hit the bricks. And then they brought in this fella. He's a mime actor named Kevin Peter Hall. And he was 7 foot two. And he had just got done playing Sasquatch in Harry and the Hendersons. So, how about nice. That? So next time you're watching Harry and the Hendersons and you see John Lithgow there screaming at Harry, just realize that he could have murdered Lithgow at any second.
He could be skinning Lithgow and hanging him from the ceiling.
That's right. He's a predator. All right. Any other little predator tidbits you'd like to share with the people there, Jay?
Oh, I mean, I like Predator 2. It's flawed, but it's good. Not as good as the first one, obviously. Predators is interesting, I guess. it's kind of, it takes place on, I don't think it's the Predator home world, but it's like a hunt world. Like, they kidnap a bunch of humans, bring them to this world, and just kind of like leave them to their own devices and start hunting them, essentially. And you start to realize that these people are all kind of dangerous in their own ways, even the ones that don't look dangerous offhand. It's interesting in certain ways. I think Danny Trejo's in there, Walton Goggins, who's, you know, always amazing. love that guy. let's see. Then The Predator was the Shane Black one. I was very excited about that. I like Shane Black's movies. And you know, he was in the first Predator as just an actor. So I was like, oh, he's coming back to the franchise. That's pretty cool. But that movie just got weird.
All right.
And, there's some funny moments, but like, I don't know. It was just like, now the Predators are also, instead of just hunting, they also want to upgrade themselves by getting special DNA. And the main thing they're after is autism for some reason. Like, that's going to help them.
They want to become hunters. Autistic? It's like, what? Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. This is taking some weird turns. And the Alien versus Predator movies, I think, are in their own timeline, essentially. Like, they're not supposed to connect exactly to either the Alien or Predator franchise. But the first one's kind of fun. It's all kind of set in Antarctica.
I thought the Predator hates cold temperatures.
Yeah. I think this is like some kind of ancient tradition they do every 100 years or something, where they
have to get
catch an alien egg there because, you know, they don't want it to get out and kill all of humanity. So they have to do it somewhere where they're not people, I guess, is the other thing. I don't know why they're so obsessed with Earth. We'd bring this alien egg to Earth in the first place. You got other places. You got your own hunt worlds, clearly.
Just remember, Jank, whoever wins Alien vs. Predator, we lose.
We lose.
That's the only important thing.
Yeah. Alien vs. Predator Requiem, the second one, is very bad. That is not a good film. Don't recommend that one at all.
I'm shocked by that. All right, so the creative team here for this issue, the writer is Mark Verheiden. And do you know anything about Mark Verheiden?
Not a clue. Nope, never heard the name before in my life.
Let's just talk about him here, I guess. 24 writing credits at Dark Horse, including Aliens, something called The American, and three different Predator series. But he also worked in movies and TV. He wrote The Mask, the Jim Carrey thing. Or at least he contributed to it. Because The Mask was a Dark Horse comic initially.
Sure was. Mm-hmm. So, a lot more darker and violent than the movie ended up being, for sure.
Yeah. And I never saw it, but yeah, from what I was reading, it seems like it was a big change in direction there for the movie. And he contributed, at least, I don't know, maybe something he wrote was based on that, or I don't know. But then he did write the screenplay and stuff for Time Cop, I think. And,
Jean-Claude Van Damme. Jean-Claude Van Damme chick. Van Damme.
Yeah. And then he also, yeah, our buddy Dave. And he also wrote My Name is Bruce. What is that exactly? Do you know what that is?
Oh, is that like a Bruce Campbell starring vehicle or something?
I have no idea. Because when I was taking the notes and I read that, you know what I thought in my head? Oh, Bruce Almighty is probably what I was thinking in my head, so I didn't even bother to look it up. But now when I read it here, I'm like, what the hell is that? My name is Bruce, I don't know. But
it's definitely got Bruce Campbell in it.
Oh, there you go. But you'll like this, Jack. And from 2001 to 2003, he was the supervising producer and co-executive producer. And then in 2004, and he wrote 9 episodes in 2004 of Smallville.
Oh, okay.
Jank loves Smallville.
I don't know. All right. There was a time in my life where I was very into Smallville. It didn't last long, but, you know, the series then went on for many more seasons, and I still kept watching it, so. Who's the sucker?
From 2005 to 2009, he was co-executive producer and wrote 9 episodes of Battlestar Galactica. How about that? That's an impressive show.
Buddy Chuffy would love that.
Yeah, and from 2009 to 2010, he was consulting producer, and he wrote 4 episodes of Heroes, that TV show.
If it was anything outside of season 1, it was probably terrible.
Yeah, so, yeah, I don't know when that would have been, 2009. From 2014 2015, he wrote 2 episodes and was executive producer of Constantine, a TV show.
Oh, what's that?
Yeah. Did you ever watch
WB?
That?
WB? Yeah. You know what? I don't think I ever did watch that show, but I saw, you know, that actor playing Constantine pop up on the other Arrowverse shows. So.
Yeah, no idea.
I think he really likes, you know, the Constantine show. He really likes that guy.
That damn Cousin Pete. And 2016, he was executive producer and wrote 2 episodes of Daredevil. My beloved Daredevil. With what's his face? What's the guy's name that plays Daredevil?
Charlie Cox.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. All right, so that's that fella. He's the writer here.
Cox.
And the artist is a guy named Chris Warner. I'm guessing you don't know anything about him either, or have you ever heard of him?
Nope. Can't say that was one that really rang a bell.
Yeah, I never heard of him either. He has 20 penciling credits at Dark Horse, including Barbed Wire, the old Pam Anderson book, The American, the same one that Verhoeven did, Predator and the Terminator. And at Marvel, he did Moon Knight Volume 2, Issues 1 through 5 in 1985. So,
okay.
Read that. I don't remember reading those. Doctor Strange Volume 2, Issues 76 to 81 in 86 and 1987. And then over at DC, he did Batman issue 408 in 1987.
Oh, one issue.
Yeah, that's all you need. Yeah. Put on your resume. Yeah. I drew an issue of Batman.
I drew Batman.
Yeah. So there it is. That's the creative team here. And I believe the cover was done by Warner and Paul Chadwick. I think they were both credited with the cover. So why don't you describe the cover for us?
Cover. Yeah, it's pretty great. So we got the Dark Horse little corner box there. Kind of like a puzzle or like a chess piece.
Yeah, like a knight from a chess piece. Yeah. Yeah, black horse. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it says Dark Horse Comics underneath it. It's pretty cool looking. We got the classic Predator logo from the movie. So that's always fun. It's got the little lines, you know, coming up from the bottom. And then it's set against like a red kind of gradient going down for the skyline. And you see New York City there. And the Predator just standing on top of a building, like shouting triumphantly. Holding his staff that's got like a skull and a, you know, spinal cord wrapped around it. He's got his mask on. I'm not showing you the money shot of his face yet. No mandibles just yet, but.
Yeah, we should say like he normally wears a mask and a helmet, and he always has like dreadlocks in the back, like long dreadlocks. And on his right arm he wears like this bracelet forearm thing with like 2 Wolverine claws on it attached to it. And it's got some other pieces of body armor. It's got like shin guards.
Usually one of his, those wrist things are always equipped with some kind of a self-destruct device. So if he loses, then he just like blows himself up. It's a real dick move. Really taking his ball and going home.
Yeah. That's what happened to Schwarzenegger in the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, when he takes his mask off, would you like to describe his face when he takes the mask off though?
Oh, it's a thing of beauty. I think in basically every movie, they copied the line from the first movie where basically as soon as somebody sees his face for something, they're just like, you are one ugly motherfucker. It's becoming like a running tradition. But yeah, he's got like a big, kind of like a weird bulbousy brain area. Like it's kind of expanded outward, like the leader almost. It's a little bit wider than the normal forehead. And he's got these like beady sunken in eyes, like they're just kind of surrounded by black. And then he's got these beady little eyes in there. And, then yeah, he's got like mandibles, like you said, where he's kind of got the outer lips that kind of fold out. There's like 4 different corners. They go separate ways. And then he's got like a little inside mouth that has like 2 fangs up top and a couple teeth down at the bottom. And, it's quite the look. Kind of very pizza face too. Like actual pizza. Like, it looks like melted cheese.
Yeah, he's kind of like, I want to say, like amphibious looking, maybe, a little bit.
I could see that. Yeah, kind of like the creature from the Black Lagoon, but with a mandible.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Something like that. All right, so that's the Predator. Now we open up the book here, and we get a black and white, like, title page. Not a title page, but just a credits page. Where I tell you everyone involved in this. And we see old Predator crouched on a edge of a building there. Yeah, he's coming to the big city.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's done hunting in the jungle. And then this first page, there just says the narrator. The narrator, the two main characters in this book are two police officers. One named Schaefer. Schaefer. And it's Schwarzenegger's brother.
Yeah, turns out it is.
Yeah.
Although there's not really much of a hint of this guy talking with an Austrian accent. So maybe they were raised separately.
But the narrator is his partner, though, right? So what's his name? Rash? R-A-C-S-T-H?
Yeah,
something like that?
Yeah.
Rash?
And the battle codes, I think.
And he's kind of like, he would be the Danny Glover of this tandem. Like, he's kind of like...
He's getting too old for this shit.
Yeah. And old baby Arnold there, little brother Arnold, he's a big badass guy. And he just
strapping.
Wants to go... Yeah, murder everybody and stuff. And then our narrator's all like, he's just going along for the ride. He's So, all right, so we open up, and there you see the sun shining here in the big city, and all the colors of these panels are like red and orange and yellow to show that it's hot in summer and whatnot. Mm. And we have a guy who just comes up behind his very attractive lady. And
big fan.
Maybe like Marge from Pee Wee Herman, like the lady driving that truck, right?
Marge, yeah. I can see that.
But he just comes up behind her with a shotgun and blows her head off.
Yeah, he's getting to people.
Yeah.
The title of the issue should have been, "Is New York Melting?" And then they could have, put that on the cover and
No. That's put Aquaman's that gimmick. That's Aquaman's gimmick. But, yeah, so this guy just murders his wife because it's hot. And our narrator fellow, he's just saying, this stuff's going on all over the city. People are going nuts because of the heat. So dang hot, And
what do you mean I can't take off my sweater?
So we just see the cops chatting it up, and we see the big guy, Arnold's brother. He's in, like, shadows a lot of the time. But he looks menacing and imposing. And then, Cenk, we cut to a gangland meeting between a group of toughs and Elton John, which seemed weird. But
it did. Yeah.
Would you like to describe what's going on here?
That's a good call. So this guy, the Elton John guy, he's kind of the more sensible one. He's like, hey, like, I'm leader of this gang. You're leader of that crazy gang. Like, we got to get together and stop these Colombians that are trying to move in on our territory. Like, they're going to cut us out, and none of us will be making any money. So if we just team up, we can, split all the profits ourselves, and we'll be all good. And the other guy's like, I'm crazy. I don't give a crap about any of this, so.
Yeah, so we got the one guy who looks like Elton John. I think his name is Lamb, which seems weird. And then the other guy, the crazy guy, he's got, like, tattoos on his face and stuff and nose piercings and stuff. And he's like, yeah, I don't care about profits. I just want to, sell drugs and shoot people. That's all I want to do. I'm a simple man.
Play Grand Theft Auto. That's all I want to do.
So while they're arguing this, though, they're trying to debate things here and come to an agreement. What happens, Jay?
Well, you see the little three dots pop up on the back of one of the guys there who's standing close to the window. And bang, something goes right through him. Just right through his chest, explodes his chest out.
Yeah, one of the henchmen there gets shot. Yeah, you say the three dots, they're like in a triangular shape, right? That's his Predator's calling card.
Pattern. Yeah.
We should also say the Predator's other big gimmick is he's got like a cloaking device, right? He can blend into the background and stuff. That was pretty cool when I was a kid and we saw Predator for the first time. We're like, oh man, look at that. How's Arnold going to fight this guy?
Yep.
Can't even see him.
So. God damage his tech. It's the only way.
So, yeah, their henchman gets slaughtered there, and the guy with the tattoos on his face, he says, hey, Lamb, this is you did this. And he's like, no, I didn't do it. It must be them filthy Colombians, They're trying to take us both out. So the one guy sticks his head out the window and he's like, I'll take care of this shooter, whoever he is. Because usually when someone, you know, shooting through the window, what you want to do is just stick your head out and look around. That's a good idea. And, but he just gets yanked right out of the window. And, what up? Now this was a little confusing because, they're like, how high up are they? They're about 10 stories up in some like old building or whatever. And apparently they just think someone's standing outside the window because they just open up with all their guns.
That's true. Yeah. Or they try to hit things across the street somehow. Like they thought that was going to work.
They just all like empty their guns out the window, shooting everything. And like, yeah, we got them now.
Shotgun. It's like, clearly you're not trying to shoot across the street.
That guy who was hovering right outside our window, we murdered him. And I couldn't tell what was happening here at first. I will say this book, the art's fine and everything, but the coloring is a little weird sometimes because a lot of the book takes place at night. So a lot of black and dark, heavy colors. And sometimes it's difficult to tell what's happening. Like, I didn't know what that was at first. It says that the predator's hand is like climbing into the window then, I guess. And
yeah, it's very purple and
no idea what that was at first.
It's a little hard to tell.
And so like, what is that? And now we cut back to our buddies, the cops, and they're just sitting in their car and they get a call about shots fired at some neighborhood. So they're like, all right, let's go investigate that. And when they get there, a dude gets chucked out of the window and he lands right on the cop car. That old chestnut.
Yeah.
Seen that a few times over the years. And boom,
sure
shatters. And then we see Arnold's brother. He loads his gun, you know, because when they arrived at the scene, the cop says, hey, no one goes in there until Captain What's-His-Face or whatever gets here, you know. And but Arnold's brother.
It seems like this guy is kind of the Gary Busey character almost, the guy who keeps telling him to get out of here. Like, this is our case.
And we finally get our big shot of Arnold's brother there with his gun. And he says, I'm going in. And he's all jacked, you know, he's huge. And it's like, all right. They got to go in there. So he and his buddy, they go up into the building and they're looking to see what's going on
gang
in there.
Gang Bang Central.
Yeah. Yeah, he calls it Gang Bang Central.
Like,
yeah. Oh, nice. I don't know. Phrasing.
Sounds like one of those terms that people are searching for on the internet.
But the Danny Glover kind of partner holds in the back there and Arnold's brother goes in first and he peeks in the room and it's just like a slaughterhouse in there.
Yeah. There's people hanging skinless everywhere.
Yep. Why is that the predator's move to skin people? Like,
I guess it's a trophy thing. But I don't know what he does with all that skin.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot of skin.
Yeah. Maybe he's doing like a Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs and he's trying to make himself a person suit.
I guess. But like, they see that lamb fella's dead, old Elton John. But the guy with the tattoos on his face, he somehow survived it, and he's about to kill them because he thinks the cops are responsible for this.
Like this guy is really firing on all cylinders, like shooting right out the window, thinking the cops somehow did this.
Clearly, they, this is the worst.
Laser blasters that can take out guys.
And so he tries to kill the partners there. And then he runs out the apartment, jumps out a window, and like goes down a fire escape, and they can't catch him. So, and now the captain shows up and he's all mad, and like you said, the Gary Busey guy, and he says, "Hey, Utah, give me two." No, he doesn't say that at all, but he's yelling at him. And I don't know, it's just the usual cop stuff, you know.
Yeah, everyone's trying to get jurisdiction and. Be like, if I was a cop, I'd just be like, yeah, take it, fine.
Yeah.
I'll sit at my desk for a while more. Cool.
So now we cut to a subway train, and why don't you describe what happens here, Jank?
So, yeah, this was weird at first because I was like, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like the Predator, but I guess they try to explain it. Because there's a bunch of people on the subway and two guys are just jibber jabbering about some nonsense, about like, Charles Manson was on TV last night and they got such huge ratings.
Yeah. I think they're like, network executives, right? Yeah. Aren't they, talking
maybe.
About
me? Yeah.
But these network executives they're packing heat.
They sure are. Everyone on the subway apparently is packing heat.
Yes,
as we come to find out.
Very strange.
Which I guess, you know, the New York subway in those times, I guess I can see it. Poor Giuliani, clean that shit up.
Well, I guess it sounds like this is technically set in the future a little bit, because didn't they say like 91 at some point? And
yeah, I think Predator 2 was set in like 97 or something like that.
Okay. So we're slightly in the future. So yeah, Charles Manson's got his own TV show, and so they're kind of
fun though. There's a little bit of like commentary on, you know, the
little American flag kind of stuff going
on. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
But yeah, the one network executive just gets shot right in the chest, and he's smoking, and then everyone else just starts busting out their guns. They pick them out of their briefcases and everything. But it's the Predator. He's on the loose, Cenk. He's on the loose.
They made the wrong move. They would had to like just let the guns stay in the case. Maybe he would have left them alone, but nope.
So now we come back to the Danny Glover partner guy. He's in his kitchen, and I guess his family's not around, and he's thinking, "Hey, I'm too old for this shit. You know, I should be moving to where does he want to move to? Alaska or something. He's got a brochure up there on the refrigerator. I don't know. He wants to move somewhere.
Oh, maybe my wife has the right idea. Is this a hint? And he's like, oh yeah, here's a picture of me and Shafe. Oh yeah, he didn't tell me anything, but we're best buddies. I think he may have one brother. I don't know. We haven't talked in 6 years.
I mean, my dad was a police officer. He had several partners over the years. He never had their picture on a refrigerator. You know, never happened. But this guy and Shafe are tight. So, yeah.
I had about the picture of Alaska. He's like, me and Shafe, we're gonna go to Alaska together. Start over.
So then, there's a ding dong at the doorbell there, at the door, and Schaefer's there, and he says, "Hey, they hit again, subway station, Midtown. Want to go or do you want to dance?" I didn't know what that meant.
That's just weird. Yeah, that's slang I don't know about. Like, what does that mean? He's in his like robe and his boxers. Why is he doesn't look like he's dressed for dancing? I'm not quite understanding this reference.
You think the guy would say, like, the tough guy would say, "Hey, let's go dance." Like, that's his lingo for let's get involved in the trouble. But no, he's like, "You want to go get involved in it, or do you want to dance?" So, like, do you think they would really go dancing if you didn't want to go?
The way he was looking at that picture, I could see them going dancing.
They take ballroom dancing lessons every Wednesday night at the Learning Annex. So anyway, they go down to the subway, and they see the same thing that they saw at the drug or mob thing or whatever. Yeah. All the bodies skinned and hanging upside down, and damn, old meat locker. And they're like, "What is going on here? Things are getting crazy." And that same captain shows up or whatever his name is, and he starts yelling at him again. And but then there's a guy in like an army uniform. He just walks up and says, "Hey, Cap, why don't you shut your mouth? I want to talk to these men." Like, who's this guy? You know, like, why would the captain listen to this guy?
Yeah. I was like, did this guy just randomly happen to be there and he happens to know like Dutch's brother? But no, apparently he's there for a reason. But yeah, the way they present it here is just like, oh, he just was just a bystander who happened to be in uniform.
But why would the captain care? Like, just because this guy's a... Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but he's very impressed by this guy. He's, oh, sure, you take him. So he takes Schaefer and his partner. They go to a bar. They're drinking it up. And when I was reading this the first time, I'm like, oh, maybe this is Jesse Ventura's character, you know? But then I was like, oh, no, he died, right? Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, he died.
I thought maybe this is him as an older man, you know? But no, so this guy's saying, hey, I knew your brother, Dutch. We were in the army together or whatever. And, you guys don't want to get involved in this stuff that's going on here in New York. Don't get involved. It's crazy. Just keep to your business. And, it seems like, but he doesn't tell them what is going on.
No, or what happened to Dutch. Like, apparently, Schaefer hasn't seen his brother in a couple of years, but they don't say, oh, he kept going after predators and died, or he's still looking for predators, or what's going on with Dutch? So maybe they get to that in the later like series that spun off of this, but I don't know.
Yeah, because he says he hasn't seen his brother in a long time or whatever. But this guy, he just has his drink and leaves. So basically, he tells them nothing except
so he got him riled up, like, oh, these might have something to do with my brother. Now
they just let him They just let him walk away, like without telling them anything. Cause you know, he's like, don't get involved. And he's like, hey buddy, this is our job. You know, we're cops and people are getting murdered. We kind of have to be involved. We're cops. So it's what we do. But he's like, no. He's like, he says, they like the hot. And, once the heat dies down or something, they'll go away. I don't know.
Oh yeah, give it 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Give it 2 weeks. Down, then we'll move on. I'll go to Miami Beach.
So he leaves. So old Dutch's brother, he's like, he takes his partner and they go back to the original crime scene of the gangland fight. And he's like, there's got to be some clues up there or something. I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. Even though the police have been going through there all night long, but there's probably something they missed. I'm going to kick everything down. That'll fix it.
I just have a hunch that something's going on up there. And so they go up to look at the old remnants of the murder scene. And yeah, he's kicking through doors. Mm-hmm. He hates doors. It's like the Shakma of the police force. But when he's up there, though, he gets a feeling that something's behind him. And he turns around, there's Predator just standing there.
Dreadlocks and all. Just kind of gives him the Aquaman to Black Manta. Just punch right in the face. Just backhands him. Like he owes him money.
Smacking him around. And then we get a big shot of the Predator standing over him, you know? And he's like, ah, look at me, I'm the Predator.
So yeah, pretty cool. Good. Pretty good art of the Predator for this. I'll give him that much.
And then Dutch's brother tries to kick him in the belly, and Predator just chucks him across the room. Yeah. And I don't know what's going on here. And then the Predator just slaps a little...
there's a really weird shot here. I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on with the floating like mask. And like, it's like, this looks weird.
It looks like he turned into like a cheetah or something. I don't know what's going on there. It's
supposed to be him going invisible, but he's not invisible the scene before that or after. So why go invisible for like 1 second?
But then he like, I guess, puts a tracker or something onto Dutch's brother's throat.
Yeah.
And his neck.
Yeah.
And he goes, what the hell did you do to me? And then he like grabs a 2x4 and smacks the Predator over the head and knocks his helmet off. So then we get the money shot. The Predator says.
Yeah, here we go. Pretty great. Looks really good.
And when the Predator talks, it's in a bunch of gibberish symbols and stuff. But then in the middle, it says, let's give him some candy.
Yep. Somebody on the subway, or no, maybe I think it was one of the gang members said that. Okay. Which actually, I believe they do in Predator 2 as well, because there's like some kid. He sees, like the Predator sees a kid in like a cemetery playing with like a toy gun, and he's like scanning him to see if he should kill him. And the kid's like, hey, you want some candy? And then later on, the Predator plays that back again. Because that's one of the things the Predator also can do, is he can like record voices and then like play them back. So since he can't speak like English, he'll just use that to like mess with people, I think.
Also, do you think like the Predators, like they have some sort of sixth sense, or they know that this is Dutch's brother? Because it almost seems like Dutch had some sort of a mental connection to the Predator here somehow. Like he sensed he was going to be there, you know, and he went off.
Yeah.
So do you think like there's the Predator, like word got back to them, like, hey, this guy has a brother, go mess with him, you know? And they're like, all right.
It could be. I mean, it seems to be like the one in Predator 1 seemed like it was on its own. It didn't seem like it had a group, really, but maybe it was, you know, relaying reports back that I'm going after this Schaefer guy, but I don't think he would know. He's going to look up this guy's bio.
this guy's brother killed Carl. We have to get him. Like, all right. And so he's kicking Schaefer's brother. What is his? They just call him Schaefer, right? They don't. Does he have a
first name? Yeah, just call him Schaefer. I think his name was Alan. Or no, that's Dutch.
Well, that was
right?
Dutch's real name, yeah.
So this guy's name was John, maybe?
All right, we'll just call him Schaefer. So the Predator karate kicks Schaefer right in the belly and sends him backwards, and he falls out the window.
Yep.
And that's where the book ends, with Schaefer falling out the window. That's it.
Dun, dun, dun.
Predator issue 1. Now, I did look ahead, Jank, and he does survive. Schaefer survives. he grabs some clothing lines, you know, strung between buildings, drying clothes and stuff like they always did in the movies.
Yep, always works.
He grabs some of those, and then
awning, break your fall.
Yeah, it slowed him down enough, and then he landed on, like, a pile of garbage bags and stuff. So he survives. He survives. And then they show him later. He's, like, in a bar, and he still has that thing in his neck. He just puts a bandage over it. So I'm guessing it's, like, a tracking device.
It seemed like it was very flat. Like, yeah. I don't know. It doesn't seem like that's going to work very well.
Well, it's, like, a big square.
Some kind of a goiter there.
Yeah, taped over it, you know. And then I think he goes into the jungles of South America in the second issue, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it looks very much like Predator at that point. He's going into the jungle.
It's weird that you would bring the Predator to the big city and then he immediately take it out of the big city. But
yeah, that's like, you know, Friday the 13th Part 8 logic, where it's like Jason takes Manhattan, but only for like the last 10 minutes of the movie. Most of the time he's on a boat trying to get to Manhattan.
So what do you think about Predator here, Jank? How'd you feel about the writing?
It was okay. It didn't sparkle for me or anything like that. It was solid enough. It was kind of what you would expect in this type of kind of cop drama. Overall, I mean, the plotting seemed fine. It was all pretty straightforward. There wasn't a whole lot of, you know, nuance, I guess. I could have done with maybe a little bit less of, okay, here's this guy keeps telling, they kind of repeated the scene of, you know, the captain telling him, hey, get your nose out of this. They did that a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know if we need this so many times, but
yeah,
kind of got the point the first.
I thought the dialogue, it was rock solid, except the one dancing line seemed weird, but otherwise it was very well written, I think. And, but yeah, like
the Shape said something like, those guys couldn't find their ass if they had both hands in their back pockets or something like that.
Yeah, it's not the best, but you know, what are you going to do? But, I thought it was pretty good. And then, like you said, the plotting, it does get a little, repetitive there. And I don't know, it just seems, I don't know, it's fine. But
there could have been better ways for them to find the Predator than just, oh, we're going to go back to that spot. No, he happens to be there.
Yeah. I just have a feeling he's there. I just sense it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that wasn't the best, but overall, it was solid writing, nothing too terrible. And, the arts was okay.
Yeah, for the most part, I thought it was pretty good. He draws a really good Predator.
Yeah, the Predator looks good.
The faces, I would say, look pretty good, so that's important.
Solid. Like I said, the coloring made things a little difficult to follow sometimes.
Sure.
But overall, it was perfectly fine. Not exactly my favorite kind of style of art, but, you know, still good.
No, me neither. But, he draws a good Elton John, so.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
It's just, this era of comic book art, I'm not a fan, like, from like 89 to 93 or 4 or so, there's just a style that seemed to be pervading the industry at that time. And,
oh, that's my era right there.
Yes. See, I don't really enjoy it that much. But I prefer the 70s kind of stuff. So, but it's perfectly fine again. I will not read any more Predator because, you know, I just don't care. But it was way better than I thought it was going to be. I'll put it that way. Like, I didn't think it was gonna, I thought it was going to be terrible. But I enjoyed it. Like, it was fine.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely see the influence on the Predator 2 movie here. So I appreciated that it set up a lot of things. It is a good premise to bring the Predator to the city. I do like that as an idea for sure.
So why go back to the jungle then right away? I don't know. Maybe as a flashback. I don't know. I'll just.
Then I think they come back maybe in like issue 3. It's just like, oh, we got to remind people it's Predator.
Yeah.
Put him in the jungle.
All right, there is. What do you think, Predator issue 1, Jay?
I'll give it like a 6. It was pretty solid.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. Yeah, I'll go 6 as well.
Greatest thing ever, but it's better than average, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't my kind of thing, you know. I'm not a huge Predator guy or anything, but it was professionally well done. Solid. Good effort. Good effort. Not my
kind contact.
Of thing. Yeah, Crank solid single.
Yeah.
So, all right, there it is, Predator. Go and enjoy that. So next week, Jank.
And what are you going to do?
Well, we're going to go back to Marvel. And I've been talking for a while. We need to do some of these big villains, you know. We haven't done. There's some villains we haven't done. So next week, we're going to talk about our buddy Baron Zemo.
Baron Zemo. All right.
And we're going to go Avengers issue 277 from 1986. And this is the final issue of the Under Siege arc where Zemo. Oh, you're aware of this.
Sure. Where the Masters of Evil, like, destroy the mansion pretty much, I think.
Yeah, they take over the mansion.
The crap out of Jarvis, right?
Yeah, that happens in, I think, issue 273. And, yeah, they just swarm the mansion. Like, I guess all the Avengers are away, you know, playing grab ass. And Jarvis is only home by himself. And they just destroy the mansion, beat the hell out of Jarvis, and then they just take control of the mansion for a few issues. And this is the final installment of that story. So,
okay.
But yeah, Baron Zemo is the mastermind behind it all. So
yeah, Baron Zemo had some plans in his day. next week.
All right, yeah, we'll talk about that next week as well. So Baron Zemo comes to Flea Market Fantasy next week. And until then, again, please like and subscribe over on YouTube. And next week, Avengers. We need to do more X-Men, Jank. I hear tell the X-Men are doing very good that last episode we did. So maybe we need to pick more X-Men because people like the X-Men.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't remember them showing up for X-Terminators.
No one did. Which is why I was reluctant to pick the X-Men. But, yeah, so there we did. So until next week, don't get any jank on you.